Welcome to Falun Gong News Direct from China and around the world from the Minghui website. This week's top stories include Australia, primetime TV documentary shines harsh light on China's organ harvesting practices. Doctors reject sugarcoating on China's organ transplant business. 30 death cases of Falun Gong practitioners confirmed in 2015. Police captain drops dead while planning to arrest Falun Gong practitioners. Iranian scholars, two paths converge at shared belief in Falun Dafa. And Bendigo, Australia, Falun Gong entry commended in Easter parade. Now for the stories.
Australia. Primetime TV documentary shines harsh light on China's organ harvesting practices. Human Harvest. China's Organ Trafficking, a 25-minute documentary on China's practice of killing prisoners of conscience for their organs, was aired during prime time on April 7th on SBS One's Dateline, the longest-running international current affairs program in Australia. The award-winning documentary put a harsh spotlight on the practice of killing on demand, something that party officials go to great lengths to cover up and deny. Multiple Australian media agencies published follow-up stories the next day. Organ traffic is a billion-dollar business for the communist regime's army and military hospitals, according to the documentary. In a country without a tradition of donating organs, more than 10,000 transplant operations have taken place every year of the past decade. Somebody's being killed for the organs. There's no other way to explain what's happening, said David Mattis, a human rights lawyer from Canada. He explained that the number of death row prisoners didn't come close to providing enough organs to explain the huge number of transplants, and that living prisoners of conscience make up for the shortfall, with Falun Gong practitioners the key targets. Mr. Mattis and veteran Canadian diplomat David Kilgore spent years collecting the evidence and concluded that a state-sanctioned organ harvesting business exists in China. Their first book, Bloody Harvest, published in 2009, presented 53 pieces of evidence collected during their research. In State Organs, Transplant Abuse in China, published in July 2012, they edited articles from seven physicians on the subject. The documentary aired on April 7th and includes accounts of witnesses, a patient who traveled to China for a kidney, and doctors. Leon Lee, producer and director of the documentary, first heard about the organ harvesting scandal in 2006. He found it hard to believe until he studied the evidence and realized that it was true, giving him the idea to make a documentary about it. I'm glad to see the response from the viewers in Australia, said Lee, referring to the tweets audience members posted. Learning about these atrocities, something I believe to be unprecedented in human history, people will talk to their friends and relatives and make efforts to stop them. Mr. Lee wasn't alone in doubting the stories of forced organ harvesting at first. Peter Westmore, president of the National Civic Council, a grassroots political organization in Australia, said that despite his initial disbelief that the Chinese regime would harvest organs from prisoners of conscience, the majority of whom are Falun Gong practitioners, he is among the many who over the years became convinced of the existence of the crime. As Mr. Westmore recalled, if the accusation of organ harvesting was true, then there had to be a big transplant industry in China. His curiosity stirred. He began to do a little investigation on his own. His own online research came up with consistent information. There were English websites aimed at English speakers and other foreigners advertising transplants at China's hospitals. They claimed that the transplants would be done immediately, and if anything went wrong with the transplant, then another would be offered within 2 weeks. The Sydney Morning Herald, TV Channel 9, news.com.au, and the Daily Mail were among the media that carried the news the next day.
Doctors reject sugarcoating on China's organ transplant business. Doctors Against Forced Organ Harvesting, DAFOH, the medical watchdog organization monitoring abuses in organ transplantation surgery, said that the international community should be wary of China's recent promise to end the harvesting of organs from executed prisoners. The Chinese government has a long-standing record of secrecy, misleading numbers, and contradictory statements, and despite mounting evidence and international demands to stop organ harvesting abuses, Beijing has refused to acknowledge the illegal harvesting of organs from prisoners of conscience. China's primary source of organs for transplantation surgeries, said to be executed death row inmates, belies a different reality, an increased reliance on organ procurement from prisoners of conscience. This vulnerable group, including Falun Gong, a brutally persecuted traditional Chinese cultivation practice, is at increased risk of falling victim to the demand for forcibly procured organs. DAFOH urges the global medical community to remain vigilant and not accept China's claims at face value, pointing out several key factors. Murky legal situation. China has harvested organs from executed prisoners since 1984. Incredibly, in a recent interview, transplant architect Huang Jiefu denied that the policy was ever an official law, which, if true, would render tens of thousands of organ procurements illegal and the same amount of transplant surgeries unethical, demanding the prosecution of doctors and support personnel. Chameleon-like statements. In a 2013 report by ABC, Huang defended the practice of harvesting organs from executed prisoners, saying that death row prisoners would want redemption. Thus, why do you object? In 2014, he stated that prisoners were citizens with the right to donate organs, an interpretation of ethical standards not shared by the international community. Last month, with a shift in political winds, Huang completely reversed his position, calling the practice a forbidden zone, pointing the finger to the now disgraced Chinese security czar, Zhu Yongkang. Implausible disappearing transplants. Chinese hospitals have been busily scrubbing their websites of evidence to downplay the extent of the transplant business. As recently as July 2014, the Guangdong No. 2 Provincial People's Hospital boasted on its website that since its establishment in 1999, it had performed over 1,000 kidney transplants. In February 2015, in a climate of global scrutiny over China's organ transplant policies, the same website was altered, now crediting the facility with only 500 kidney transplants since 1999. The number of kidney transplants that the department had performed was also changed from 2,000 to 1,200 during the same period. It is evident that China is not ready to share internationally accepted ethics and join the transplant community as an equal trusted partner. In order to take the Chinese government's claims seriously, international monitoring groups and medical organizations must demand full disclosure of the use of prisoners of conscience as an organ source, transparency of organ sources, and access to China's organ procurement pathways. About Doctors Against Forced Organ Harvesting. Founded and organized by medical doctors of various specialties from all over the world, Doctors Against Forced Organ Harvesting, DAFOH, aims to provide the medical community and society with objective findings of unethical and illegal organ harvesting. Organ harvesting, the removal of organs from a donor, without obtaining prior free and voluntary consent, is considered a crime against humanity, as well as a threat to medical science in general.
Thirty death cases of Falun Gong practitioners confirmed in 2015. 14 Falun Gong practitioners are confirmed to have been tortured to death in the first 3 months of 2015. In addition, 16 death cases that occurred between 2007 and 2014 have been recently confirmed. Among these 30 cases, 18 were female practitioners and 12 were male. The age ranges were from 36 to 79. 27 of these practitioners were sentenced to prisons, labor camps, detention centers, and/or jailed in brainwashing centers before death. The longest sentence was 13 years. All of the practitioners experienced severe torture before death, including being subjected to brainwashing, brutal beatings, sleep deprivation, and electric shocks. Other tortures included burning with candles, stretching the body and limbs, being tied to an iron chair, injection with unidentified drugs, and being forced to stand outside in snow with insufficient clothing. Many of the practitioners who died were model workers or were highly accomplished in their respective fields, including Liu Yanggi, a senior aeronautics engineer at the 8358 Institute in Tianjin, Wang Guiqian, a TV news editor in Guizhou, and Liu Jiang, a model teacher.
Police captain drops dead while planning to arrest Falun Gong practitioners. Editor's note: in both Western and Chinese society, the principle of karmic retribution, that is, being held ultimately accountable for one's own actions, is widely accepted. Stated another way, good deeds will be rewarded with good, while evil doings will meet due retribution. Articles such as this one are meant as a compassionate reminder of this principle to those who would commit wrongdoing. While many of those who persecute Falun Gong are merely following orders, the universal law requires that they too be held responsible for their actions, and that only by reversing their course of wrongdoing may they escape retribution. According to a trusted insider, domestic security captain Li Xiaoju died at a planning meeting to launch another wave of persecution targeting local Falun Gong practitioners. Li Xiaoju, 57, was also the chief of the Urban Administrative and Law Enforcement Bureau of Pulandian in Dalian City. At a bureau meeting around February 9th of this year, he was trembling with rage and cursing Falun Gong. Shouting at the top of his lungs, he suddenly fell over onto the table and died. It was said that he suffered a brain hemorrhage. This is just one of many examples of officials who actively engage in the persecution of Falun Gong practitioners dying suddenly. To advance his political career, Li did everything he could to carry out the persecution, from planning to execution to arrest, as well as detaining and torturing practitioners in Pulandian. Li had practitioner Ms. Teng Wenxi arrested and secretly sentenced to 3 years in prison. She was tortured in the Fushun Brainwashing Center. Her husband, Mr. Song GD, was forced to leave home to avoid further persecution. Unable to cope with life on the run, Mr. Song died on December 23, 2007. Li and three other officers arrested practitioner Ms. Wang Jing on June 2, 2011. Ms. Wan was sent to the Mansangia forced labor camp and brutally tortured. Two of his deputy chiefs have refused to assume his position, fearing they might end up like him.
Iranian scholars: two paths converge at shared belief in Falun Dafa. Manaz and Mohammad Ismaili, an Iranian couple now living in Vancouver, Canada, met each other at a Falun Dafa activity. Mohammad said to me, "I'm not going to get married this life." I responded, "No one would want to marry you, don't worry." Manaz recalled with a smile, "Yet we fell in love and got married 2 years later." Two paths converged at shared beliefs. Different paths led these two scholars to start practicing cultivation in Falun Dafa. Manaz was teaching at Seman University in Iran after completing her PhD in psychology, yet academic success didn't bring her happiness. "I wasn't able to solve my own psychological problems, even though it is my field," Manaz recalled. "I was constantly in anxiety. The anxiety caused me to have stomach and kidney problems. A car accident 20 years ago added pain to my list of problems. I was often unhappy. I hoped that something would save me someday." Manaz learned about Falun Dafa through a friend. They went to watch the 9-day Falun Dafa lecture video series in 2003. Practitioners from Sweden visited Iran a few times during 2002 and 2003 to introduce Falun Dafa. The video lecture was in English. Manaz didn't understand English back then. However, she was impressed by the energy field. It was strong and comfortable. Her back pain was significantly reduced. She realized that the practice was very powerful. She soon got a copy of the Persian version of Juan Falun, the main book of Falun Dafa, and began practicing cultivation. Mohammed is a process management scholar. He said, "People thought I was successful, but I wasn't happy." He too was troubled by stomach problems and shoulder pain and resorted to smoking and drinking to ease his suffering. He went to Turkey and hoped to find a way to go to Europe, but didn't succeed. After he returned from Turkey, Mohammed was in low spirits. his colleague gave him a book of the Persian version of Falun Gong, Falun Dafa's introductory book. Falun Gong is another name for Falun Dafa. He finished reading the book in one day and was happy to have found Falun Dafa, especially the tenets of truthfulness, compassion, forbearance. "I've obtained answers to a lot of my questions in life," Muhammad said. He quit smoking and drinking in a week. "I didn't even know when my pain and diseases disappeared. One day I suddenly realized that I was pain-free. I also became lighthearted. Better relations with others." Manaz attributed her different state of mind to her Falun Dafa cultivation. "I'm peaceful and able to forgive those who wronged me. I am no longer angry at them. I sincerely hope to help them because I feel their pain." Applying the principles of truthfulness, compassion, forbearance was difficult at first. Manaz works in a very competitive environment. Professors compete for research topics and students. They often get into arguments during thesis evaluations. "Many students want to study under me. Other professors weren't happy about that. Some even ignored me when I greeted them. Our relations were once quite tense," Manaz recalled. "I often thought others were to blame for my problems. I thought I was right. After practicing Falun Dafa, I started looking within and realized that I had much to improve on my end. I still greeted my colleagues warmly, gave them my sincere compliments, and was able to improve my work relations. A colleague who used to be in a Cold War with me became a good friend of mine in the end." Muhammad had similar experiences. "I used to think that I was better than others based on my intelligence. I was attached to my skills. However, I understood the principle of looking inward and re-evaluated my past success. I learned to be more down to earth and gained more trust from my friends and colleagues." Relaying the truth. Ever since he learned about the persecution in China, Muhammad has made it his mission to clarify the truth. He raises awareness about how Chinese communist propaganda has misled Chinese and people around the world and prevented them from knowing what Falun Dafa is. Due to economic relations between Iran and China, a lot of Iranians don't know about the severe human rights violations in China, nor the persecution of Falun Dafa practitioners. Muhammad told his friends, colleagues, and local media about the persecution, especially about how Falun Dafa practitioners detained in China are subjected to state-sanctioned organ harvesting. Manaz, with other practitioners, helped translate Bloody Harvest, a book by Canadian human rights lawyer David Mattis and former Canadian Secretary of State David Kilgore, on the subject of organ harvesting into Persian. The first print was published in 2012 and sold out. Manaz made a presentation about forced organ harvesting at an international human rights conference in Tehran in November 2012. The issue was reported by local media and had a notable impact on the public. Moving to Canada, practicing Falun Dafa has also sparked the Ismailis' interest in Chinese culture. They felt close to Chinese people and the culture, so they had the idea to move to a place where they can practice freely and be in touch with many Chinese. In the end, they chose Canada. They arrived in Vancouver in January 2015. They were happy to see so many Chinese. "I very much want to let my new Chinese friends know they should get to know Falun Dafa on their own, independent of the communist propaganda. Don't be deceived by the Chinese Communist Party that persecutes innocent people for its own political gain," Muhammad said. The Ismailis feel certain that just as predestined connections brought them to the practice and together on the journey, their move to Vancouver will facilitate many more predestined encounters with Chinese who are yearning to learn the truth about Falun Dafa.
Bendigo, Australia, Falun Gong entry commended in Easter parade. Falun Gong practitioners participated in the Easter parade at Bendigo, the fourth largest inland city in Australia, on April 5, 2015. This was the 15th time they had been invited to be in this event. The spectators enjoyed watching and hearing the Divine Land Marching Band, the waist drummers, the exercise demonstration, and the beautiful lotus flower float. More than 60 groups made up the parade, a record for the four-day Easter fair that originated in 1871. Peter Cox, the mayor of Bendigo, praised the practitioners' performances and thanked them for their hard work. Seeing the banner emblazoned with the words truthfulness, compassion, forbearance, Cox commented, "This is very important." He said that many people from around the world had come to Bendigo since the gold rush in 1851, and that the city welcomes everyone. Building a community that is kind and tolerant, in his opinion, means that people can live together in harmony and be happy. After hearing the Divine Land Marching Band and observing practitioners' other performances, Cox complimented the music and the costumes. "Thank you all for being part of this event," he said. Bendigo Citizen of the Year, Penelope Davies, led the parade with Mr. Cox. She was given the honor for her 40 years of community service and contributions to higher education and health. "I am familiar with Falun Gong practitioners because their involvement makes our parade better. They are an important part of the parade and we welcome them," she said. She also praised this year's entry. "It's fabulous. I like their performances because they are always so good." She said the principles of truthfulness, compassion, forbearance should apply to everyone, every day. "We should all respect these principles because of their moral value." Anders, a psychologist from Gippsland, was also impressed by the Falun Gong entry. "The principles of truthfulness, compassion, forbearance are good, and we need more like them." Based on her experience, she believes that it is critical to tolerate different opinions. "I will definitely share this," she added. Anders thanked practitioners for being in the parade. "They are here year after year and are always very peaceful. It is great to see them here." Thank you for listening to the Minghui Radio podcast. For more information, including news about the persecution of Falun Gong practitioners in China and experience sharing stories by practitioners around the world, please visit our website at en.minghui.org.